Hello, and welcome back to the Unrest Podcast. I'm Caitlin Stansel.
And I'm Madeline Green. If you haven't already, please, please subscribe to the Unrest Podcast so you can stay up to date on all of our many spooky stories and real life haunts that we love to share with you each week, besides last week, because it was Thanksgiving. And that's a spooky story in itself if you have a crazy family, but we don't, do we, Caitlin?
No, we have great families, but I was sick, so it was a little bit of a spooky Thanksgiving for me because I didn't really get to enjoy it, but that's okay.
That's no fun.
How was yours?
Mine was great. As you know, we have a very diverse family. So on my mom's side, her sisters used to travel. They married men from all over the world. And so I have cousins that are adopted. I have a lot of my family live in Dubai. So it's always fun to kind of come together and see how their year has gone because they do spend time in other areas. And I mean, you know, North Carolina, we just don't get that diverse there in the Union Grove area.
That old Yad Tell, is that what it's called?
Yes.
No, that's awesome. I'm sure it's so fun to hear every year, you know, what they've been up to. And you know what else I love to hear about? Real life haunts. And we have a great one this week.
No.
Yeah.
Tell us more.
Well, this one is real close to home. I talked to Eric. He has been in Charleston for quite some time now. And I actually found him because back in the pandemic, 2020, he runs this company called Charleston Pirate Tours. If you don't know, Charleston has a lot of fun pirate history and just a lot of history in general. If you've heard our podcast before, we've talked about it a lot. Anyways, during the pandemic, he was sharing some video stories of experiences he's had on these tours and just some interesting tidbits about Charleston history and that kind of thing. And I like put that back in my memory and I was like, okay, I'm going to talk to him at some point for the podcast. And I finally got to catch up with him and he shares a couple of great stories. Two of them focus on this alleyway called Philadelphia Alley and just some like interesting experiences that happened there. And also one sort of personal story to him about an experience that just was really touching to him and sort of really justified that there is life after death. So take a listen.
You know, Philadelphia Alley, whenever I give a tour, and I don't take people there every night. It just depends on if I've got time, number one, and number two, how crowded the alley is. Because, there's a lot of people that go in the alley, but they have kind of a skewed, if you will, idea of what the alley actually is. It was just a shortcut between two streets, but it's been given a lot of names like Bloody Lane and Dueler's Alley. But a good friend of mine who wrote a book called Dueling in Charleston, his name is Graham Long. He's one of the guys down at the Charleston Museum. In fact, as far as I know, he runs the place. And he wrote a book called Dueling in Charleston years ago, and I ran into him at a book signing. I happened to be there for another completely different thing, and he was there as well. And I congratulated him on his book, and I said, well, I got to ask you, how many people were shot in duels in Philadelphia Alley? And he said, I can't find any record of anybody ever being shot in that alley or a duel ever taking place in the alley. I better clarify that. Can't say nobody was ever shot in the alley. But he said, I can't find a record of any duels in the alley. But like I say, it's not like they ran an ad in the paper saying, you know, tomorrow, 3 o'clock, be there, you know, duel in the alley. I mean, it wasn't like they ran an ad in the paper. So, I mean, it's not, because it's not recorded doesn't necessarily mean it didn't happen. I mean, I've been doing research and history stuff for a long, long time. And there's so many wild tales about Charleston. It's just hard to keep up. And And I try to dispel what things I know I can dispel, and I can't. And sometimes I just tell people I can't confirm it or deny it that it happened. But yeah, that alleyway is a very creepy alley. I've had some strange experiences in there. And just the background on those videos you watched, you know, Charleston turned 350 years old in 2020. Mm-hmm. And so, or I should say South Carolina did. I mean, it would just happen to be Charleston was the first settlement. But the colony began in 1670. It was 250 years old in 2020. So my wife Sabrina and I had decided early on, as sort of a commemorative thing, to do these little 3 to 5 minute little snippets of video. You probably turn out maybe one a week, two a week, you know, just about different historical things, and try to spread them out over the year of 2020. But then we had a pandemic hit us, and they shut everything down. So instead of doing one or two a week, after we didn't have anything to do for 3 solid months, we were turning out 3 or 4 a day. There's about 60 of them on our website. So if you go to our website, charlestonpiratetour.com, and you go down to the pull-down, the drop-down menu where it says Captain's Vlog, you'll find over 60 of those. And some of them are just history. Some of them are ghost stories. Some of them are kind of funny. We've got blooper reels. I mean, trust me, we have plenty of bloopers. And so we figured we may as well laugh at ourselves and have some fun with it. So we did a couple of those and threw them in there too. But two of the craziest things that I've had happen to me on the street happened in those alley, in that alley. And the one that I think you may have heard or saw, there's a small little step there in the alley. It's sort of a stoop, and there's a bricked up door there, because this building today is the Queen Street Theater. And I guess it was a warehouse ages ago, like most of those large buildings are in that part of town that were warehouses. And so that was one of the back entrances to this building. And it's been bricked up as long as I can remember. And so one night I was standing there, and I was just talking about some, you know, general weird things about the alley, and showed them a picture that I had that a guy had taken in the alley on one of my tours back in probably 2007. And while I was standing there talking, there was this pretty good sized group, and it was a lady that had her daughter, and I'd say the daughter was maybe 10 or 12 years old. And so I wrapped up. I said, folks, this was our last stop tonight. I want to thank everybody for coming, yada, yada. And I said, if you want me to, I'll get you out of the alley and point you back to where you can get back to where you need to go. I can give you directions. And so as we turned to walk out of the alley, the lady caught up with me with her daughter and said, my daughter wanted to tell you something, because I was watching her during the last few minutes of that while I was there. And I could tell she was all of a sudden just captivated by something. Big smile on her face, almost her eyes lit up and her big smile on her face, and almost like she was giggling. So I said, okay. I said, she wants to tell me something. I said, what you want to tell me, sweetheart? And I looked at her, and she didn't say anything. She just stood there smiling at me. And her mom said, well, I'll tell you, if she won't, she sees things. And I just retorted right back, well, I do too sometimes. And she said, no, you don't understand, she sees dead people. I said, okay, I have come across this before, I've heard about this before. And I said, I've known people that have claimed to be able to do that, communicate with dead people. She said, no, I'm telling you now, since she was young, I mean real young, when she was like, oh, just old enough to start talking, she would ask us sitting around in a room, who is that over there sitting in the corner? And we look, honey, we don't see anybody. And she would describe some relative that she had never met in her life. And she would describe them right down to what they were looking like up to the point, you know, while they were in the prime of their life. And they would go find a picture, and they go through photographs, old family photographs, said, well, do you see them here? Oh, yeah, that's them right there, and point them out in the picture. And I said, well, that's fascinating. I said, I appreciate you sharing that with me. And I said, well, what was it you wanted to tell me tonight? And she said, I thought you'd like to know why you were standing there talking to us. I saw somebody walk through that bricked up door behind you, stood there and watched you for a few minutes. And they just smiled and shook their head, and they just walked down the alley and disappeared. I said, well, I appreciate you sharing. But the other one that really blows a lot of people's minds And I could kick myself for not being able to recover this email that the guy sent me the next day after this tour that I'd given. Same place. I stand in the same place. And there are bright street lights in this alleyway on just lamppost. And so it's a well-lit alley. It's not like there's any shadows and things can lurk in the shadows of this alley. So, but on this particular night, I had wrapped up my tour. And I was helping working with my friends at Bulldog Tours that weekend because I've worked with them, gosh, since 2007. I don't work much with them now. I've kind of pulled back a lot because I'm just getting old and tired. And since that pandemic hit, I've just kind of pulled back from a lot of stuff that I was doing. And so on this particular night, I was helping them out. For about 13 years, I did their haunted jail tour in the old district jail on Magazine Street. And I could keep you, you know, enraptured with stories out of there for 2 hours, pictures to back them up. But I was working on the week. I was working on the street that weekend. And it was a Saturday night. And I'd wrapped up and I said, well, folks, we're done. You know, I'm going to get us out of the alley. And I looked at my watch and I said, no, well, just wait a minute, folks. I said, we got 5 minutes to kill. You know, our tour is supposed to be over at 10. It's 9:55. Let's just have a little bit of fun. So I said, I'm just going to throw out some names of a few hotels and bed and breakfast inns. And they're scattered all over town here. And there's no way we get to any of them on a walking tour tonight. In fact, a lot of them are in parts of town that are off limits to walking tours. And I said, I tell you what, I'm going to name a few places. And if I mention somewhere, and if any of you are staying in any of these places, well, then let me know. And I'll be more than happy to tell you a story about where you're going to spend the night tonight. Give you something to think about tonight when you leave. So I just rattled off a half a dozen different places I could think of off the top of my head. Nobody made any noises or anything. Nobody looked at me and waved their hands. Oh, that's me. And then I mentioned the Embassy Suites on Meeting Street. Well, as soon as I said that, I had a couple that were standing really right in front of me. And they had two kids, probably about 6, 8 years old. I don't know. So anyway, as soon as I said that, this lady looked me straight in the face and she just shook her head and said, Lord, have mercy. That's where we're staying. I said, well, good, ma'am. Let me tell you a story about where you're going to spend the night tonight. It was September in 2003. There was a world-famous cardiologist. Her name was Dr. Anna Fletcher, and Dr. Fletcher's from Brussels. And she was in Charleston at a conference at the Medical University of South Carolina. And she was staying at the Embassy Suites, and she checked out the second night she was there. And she never went back to the hotel. And when she got back to Brussels, she told a lot of people what had happened. And somebody wrote the story down in the book. It's been published. It's in a book. I think it's in Ed Macy's book, his ghost story book. I think it's in Ed. And she told about what happened. Well, she flew in, and I'm sure she had spent a lot of time on an airplane flying from Brussels. And when she finally got to town, it was sort of late. She got checked into the hotel. She was tired. She grabbed a quick dinner. Got back to the hotel, got ready for bed. And when she got the lights out, she said it was so dark I couldn't see my hand in front of my face. So she turned on a light in the bathroom, which, you know, a lot of people do that. They turn on a light in the bathroom, crack the door just enough to leave a little bit of light to shine out across the room in case they have to get up in the middle of the night. So that's what she did, got a good night's sleep. Well, she got up the next day, went to the first day of the conference. And she said, by the end of that conference that day, she said, that jet lag was just kicking me. So she said, I ran and grabbed a quick dinner, went back to the hotel, and all she wanted to do was get another good night's sleep. So she gets back to the hotel, got ready for bed, turned on the light in the bathroom, cracked the door, crawls into bed, falls down asleep. Around 3 a.m, she just woke up. Well, you know, she roused it up like a lot of people do, and she just rolled over, tried to go back to sleep. But she said, I noticed there was something moving just off the foot of my bed. So she said, I kind of rolled back and looked out across the end of the bed into the dark and said, suddenly this guy in a gray uniform stepped right up to the foot of my bed. He stepped right out of the dark. And there he was. And she said, I sat straight up in bed. There's a guy standing at the foot of my bed at 3 o'clock in the morning in my hotel room. And she said, he leaned over to get a better look at me. And when he was leaning over, all this light from the bathroom now sort of lit his whole upper torso up. And that's when she made a rather startling discovery. She said, this man's not alive. because it looked like something had blown half this man's head off. So she said she screamed and went racing to the door. And as she went racing to the door, she said he jumped between me and the door, and I literally ran through him. And she got down in the lobby screaming for help. Well, somebody came out to see what all the commotion was, and all she could tell this member of the night staff, I'm not going to stay in this place. There's something in my room. You have to get me out of here. And she was just hysterical. So he and some of the night staff went up to the room. She said, I never went back in. I stood outside the door. And they're in there poking around, looking around. Ma'am, there's nothing here. She said, I don't care what you don't see now. I know what I did see earlier. And I'm not staying in this place. So they graciously gathered my things and brought them all to me, my luggage and everything. And they took me across the street and set me up in a nice room at the Francis Marion Hotel. And I always joke, when I tell this story, I said, they didn't bother to tell her it was haunted too. Yeah. Well, anyway, she said, I spent the rest of my night sitting up in that room, just terrified with every light on, that I was going to see this man again. Well, I look at that family and I said, I hope y'all have a lovely evening there tonight. That woman said, we out of there in the morning. I said, ma'am, I'm sorry. Now, I didn't mean to chase you out of your hotel room. And her husband started laughing. He said, oh, no, no, no. You're not chasing us out of there. We've been there all week. Our vacation's over. We're going home in the morning. I said, well, you ought to be good for one more night. Well, this is on a Saturday night. Well, I went into work on Sunday night. I had a 7 o'clock tour. I guess I got there somewhere between 6:30, 6:45, and I walked in. There was a lady named Tracy that used to work with us there, and she was behind the counter. She saw me come in, and she grabbed this piece of paper and was just waving it at me. She said, would you come get this? There's a phone number here. This guy called. He's all excited. Wants to tell you about something. He said he was on your tour last night. I said, okay, though. So I went back in the office, and I dialed this long-distance number, and the guy answers the phone. I said, this is Eric Lavender. I gave you a tour last night. I understand you want me to give you a call. And this guy starts laughing. He said, man, I am so glad you called. He said, we were the family with you last night staying at the Embassy Suites. I said, oh, please, tell me something didn't chase y'all out of that room. He said, oh, no, 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 no. We had a wonderful time. In fact, we can't wait to come back. He said, but I'm going to tell you, we had something weird happen, and we had to call and tell you about it. He said, they got up that morning before daylight, packed their car. He said, we drove all day long. He told me over the phone, and then he sends me an email the next day, pretty much verifying everything I'm telling you from this point forward. And then the email got lost when the computer crashed ages ago, because this is probably about 15 years ago now. So anyway, he said, we got home a few minutes ago. He told me they lived in Tennessee. The way he described it, he said, if you drew a line between Chattanooga and Nashville, somewhere about halfway in between, just north of the Alabama state line is where they lived. He said, we walked in the house a while ago. We dropped our luggage, long day on the road. I'm fixing my wife and myself something to drink. We could fix them. I'm fixing up some ice water in the sink. Kids are getting something to drink out of the refrigerator. We just got to rest a few minutes before we start unpacking everything. And he said, while I was fixing the water, I noticed there was a message on the answering machine. Just one. So he said, while I was fixing our water, I just reached over and hit the play button on the answering machine. He said, as soon as that message started, it freaked us out. He said, it freaked out the kids so bad, they ran to the room. He said, my wife just poured her water out and poured herself a stiff drink to calm her nerves and said, you have got to hear this message. Well, at this point, I'm sort of intrigued by it. I said, well, okay. He said, you might not believe it. I said, I don't know. Try me. Well, he laid the telephone by the answering machine and hit the play button. And this is what immediately came over the telephone. Anybody here staying at the Embassy Suites on Meeting Street? Oh, Lord have mercy, that's where we're staying. Well, good, ma'am. Let me tell you a story about where you're going to spend the night tonight. September 2003, there's a world-famous cardiologist. Her name is Dr. Anna Fletcher. She is from Brussels, and she's in charge. My voice on his answering machine from the night before, we're standing in the alley. Now, when this played for a few seconds, he picked up the phone and said, what do you think about that? I said, well, I don't know. I said, how'd that happen? He said, that's why we're freaked out. He said, you made an announcement last night at the beginning of that tour, and we all heeded your announcement. And this is true. This is a long time ago before we had these fancy telephones we've got today. But this is back around 2010, 2011. And I made an announcement. I said, folks, y'all got your little flippy phones with you? How about taking it out of your pocket, flip it open, and flip it off? I'm not, I mean, if you just be kind enough to turn off your phones, that way it's not going to ring in the middle of the tour. And I'll remind each and every one of you at the end of this tour to pull out your phones and turn them back on so you don't miss anything. He said, I pulled out my phone and turned it off, and it was in my pocket turned off. I'm standing under a street light, and everybody around me is, I could reach out and touch. And there was not a single phone that I saw anywhere in anybody's hand. But either way, that story I told them of their hotel was waiting on them on their answer machine 350 miles away from that alley when they got home the next day. That is a true story. You go back to my childhood. Well, see, I was born in Gaffney. Mm-hmm. And I came down here a long time ago. I was a state employee. I was a parole officer for 20 years. And that was a long time ago because I've been out of that business since 1997, I think. But anyway, we always used to just go up to the mountains, you know, drive up the mountains in the fall to go buy apples. That was just a thing. You know, my mom and dad, my two brothers, we pile in the car. We drive up in the mountains, go buy apples and drive up there, drive up Blue Ridge Parkway, you know, just enjoy the sights, the change in leaves and all this kind of stuff. Well, we had gone up there and I was around 9, 10 years old. And there was a pull off on one of the roads and there's a valley and there's a range of mountains over there. And we pulled over and we got out. My dad's, you know, he said, I bet you'll get a kick out of this. So we all walked over and there was a sign that said the Brown Mountain Lights. There's a range of mountains. It's outside of Morganton, North Carolina. It's called the Brown Mountain Range. And there is this particular mountain. It's kind of a funky looking thing. And the legend is that there were two warring tribes. I can't remember if it was the Cherokees and it wasn't Apaches, but it was another smaller tribe. There were Cherokees and another tribe, as the legend goes, got into a heated battle somewhere on that mountain. And there were, you know, just dozens and dozens of fatalities in this battle. And the legend is the women went looking for their men from the tribe with torches all up and down the mountain trying to find their bodies. And I was standing there just watching, and literally I could see what appeared to be torches going up and down that mountain. Now, there are no roads on this mountain. There's no houses on this mountain. And it's just a legend. And there's other versions of the story as of what they are, of a lost child that people were looking for with torches. I mean, there's all kind of crazy stories about it, but that's the one that seems to be the most plausible, that has more of a, I guess you might say, based in more history. But either way, I actually saw those lights going up, bouncing around the side of that mountain. And there's no explanation for it. I mean, there's a lot of people that speculate what it could be scientifically, but I don't think anybody's ever agreed on any of it. But I was hooked. And ever since then, growing up, I mean, people, when I was growing up and kids, you know, my buddies would say, well, you know, I'm reading a Batman comic book or one of these other comic books. What are you reading any comic books this week? I said, no, I don't read comic books. I read ghost story books. And I just grew up that way. One of the very first things I did when I relocated to Charleston, this is way a long time ago before there were organized tour companies. Once a year, around late October, mid to late October, I think it was the Charleston Preservation Society or the Historical Society would do ghost tours. They would just do a ghost tour. And, I mean, they went everywhere. I mean, there was no limitations or no regulations or anything. And, man, it was a – and I was one of the very first things I did when I got down here because I knew the haunted history of Charleston. Now, I don't even – the only story I remember them telling, I remember they told the story of the first time I heard the story of Lavinia Fisher, who goes haunts the jail. And I can verify that because she used to follow me around when I worked in that jail. I got pictures of her. And, but of course they told the outlandish story that has absolutely no basis in truth that she was a serial killer. She never killed anybody. She never killed anybody. She and her husband were executed for highway robbery, which really and truly is such thin evidence that they actually committed the crime. I doubt they would be convicted today, but either way, that's neither here nor there. But after that, you know, I just started, I was way too busy to try to get more involved with tour stuff. And then tour companies began to pop up when I got out of law enforcement. I said, well, I need to do something. I'm too young to retire. So I became a tour guide. That was in 2007. I had done some other odds and ends and decided I wanted to do something a little more fun. And, you know, I went to work at Bulldog. And John Laverne hired me. And I think we might have had, when I went to work with him, there might have been 10, 15, 20 guides at the most. And I think he's probably got 60 or 70 guides now. But, of course, he's branched out and does a lot more variety of things. But I was just doing strictly ghost tours. And then I started getting into more historical things. And then I started doing pirate stuff and started really doing a lot of, you know, extensive research into what actually took place with pirates. And, you know, just kind of kicking Hollywood to the curb about things that happened around here with pirate stuff. But that's kind of my background, if you will. Charleston's got some really strange history. You know, it really does got some dark history and some ugly history. And I guess if you, you know, if you believe in the paranormal stuff, then I think it just lends itself to that. Based on some of its dark history, some of its quirky history, that it just sort of lends itself to that. And a lot of people have had some horrible ways of going. I mean, Lord, listen, we've had earthquakes, fires, wars, hurricanes, tornadoes. I mean, there's a lot of opportunity for people to have lost their lives in some horrible, tragic way. And, I mean, if you ever go through graveyards or cemeteries, it's kind of sometimes easy to spot some of these deaths that were really, somebody wasn't really prepared for that death. If you ever notice when you've gone through a cemetery or graveyard, you might see a grave marker that looks like a Corinthian column, like you would see holding up a big porch. Mm-hmm. But if you look at the top of it, it's broken and there's a wreath hanging on it. That is a symbol of somebody who died unexpectedly when they shouldn't have. When our daughter, she's 23 now, when she was 3 years old, my wife's mom passed away. And so she might have been four. I can't remember. It's been a long time ago now. When you're my age, you forget these things. But she was 3 or 4 years old when she passed away. And it's the first time she'd ever experienced a death of someone that close. Mm-hmm. But she was really, really, you know, resilient with it. I mean, she was good because she knew that she had not been in best of health. But anyway, her father, that happened. Well, she got through it pretty well. Well, her birthday is in May, and the following May after her passing, all she wanted for her birthday was one of these big wooden swing sets. Yeah, I'm sure you've seen these things. Mm-hmm. In fact, you know, there's companies that just specialize in those things. Well, I found one. I think I bought it at Lowe's. I had to order it, and I had to rent a truck to go get the thing. It must have been about 150, 200 pieces and about 9,000 screws. So I got it, and I got the backyard where I was going to build it just pristine, you know. Because one of the things that I wanted to make sure of where I was putting it, because we live on the Isle of Palms, our yard, you know, gets, and especially in the fall, that's when the sand spurs come up in late August and early fall. And I mean, if you've ever experienced them, you'll never forget your first time, believe me. So I want to make sure all these were out of there. And so I put down this pre-emergent stuff that kills them off. And I just really groomed the lawn and I started building this thing. Well, it took me weeks to build it because that's when my wife and I were both working in radio. I was working in advertising sales and so was she. And we both worked for a radio station group here in town. And so I'd work on it in the evenings when I get off work. Well, you know, Ariel, she'd come out. Is it ready yet? Is it ready? No, sweetheart. I'll let you know when it's done. I'll let you know when it's done. And this is your birthday present. It's not your birthday yet. Well, I got it finished probably, I don't know, a week before her birthday. And her birthday was on a Saturday that year. So I finished it up. And I kept telling her it wasn't ready for her to play on it. I said, no, not quite. I still got to do a little more tightening on these screws and whatnot. So. Well, when I was done, I was out there one evening. I was just making sure that the yard was still good around it, because I didn't want her to get in all those stickers and get them in her shoes and her socks and in her feet and all that, and in her hands if she fell out of a swing. Well, I noticed that there was something growing out of the ground, and I couldn't figure out what it was. It was about as big around as my thumb, and it was about 3 inches out of the ground. I thought, well, that's interesting. What in the world was this? I just left it alone, didn't pay any attention, because I knew it wasn't anything that was going to hurt nothing. Well, you know, a couple of days later, I went back out there just to kind of look around, because I'll keep looking like I was working on it, because I didn't want her on it until it was her birthday. Well, this thing that I saw was now almost 2 feet high. It was like a big, dark green. I thought it was bamboo, but it wasn't, because it was smooth. I thought, well, this is weird. I wonder what this thing is. And it just kept growing. Well, I didn't go back in the yard again for a couple of 3 more days. And then it was her birthday. And I told her, I got her out of bed. Sabrina and I got her up. I said, sweetie, it's your birthday. And your swing set out back is done. You can go play on it. And she went ripping through the house and out the back door. And I told Sabrina, I said, well, let's go out there. Let's see how she likes it. So we went out there. And she was on this little swing thing and back and forth, back and forth. And now this thing that was growing out of the ground is almost 3 feet tall. It is a sunflower bigger than both of my hands put together. And I said, this is weird. And Sabrina said, did you plant that? I said, no, it just came up. I've never seen a sunflower on this island. And I've been out here a long time. I've never seen a sunflower out here. And sunflowers, you know, you got to plant them. Here it was. And so we're both standing there just amazed at this beautiful sunflower growing up right beside the swing set. And the blossom was facing the swing set. And while we were just standing there looking at it and talking, Arielle, you know, just right out, she just said, oh, isn't that pretty? Those were Grandma's favorite flowers. Her house, she used to have artificial sunflowers all over that house. She would have them in vases. She had them in little containers. And, I mean, big, tall, artificial sunflowers. Ariel used to get out and play with them, and they would march around the house with them. That sunflower stood beside that swing set for the entire summer. And it stayed there. And as soon as summer came to a close, she was getting ready to start, you know, 5-year-old preschool or 4-year-old, 4 or 5-year-old preschool, whatever it was. And so, you know, she wasn't going to be able to get out there and play like she was every day on it. But that sunflower stood there every day that she played on that swing set for the entire summer. And when she got she started preschool, it wilted and died. And not one sunflower ever grew back in that spot.
Well, first of all, Eric is just an incredible storyteller. I mean, you can just tell that he is so good at his job in giving tours of Charleston. But I just love hearing these experiences that he's had himself on these tours, and even just the personal story with his daughter and the sunflower. I mean, as he said, you know, it's touching. They aren't scary, but they're kind of like touching stories.
I agree. I love, though, how, you know, we've gone on so many of these tours and stuff, but to hear we haven't been as lucky to have experiences. So to hear, you know, a few actual experiences that people have had, it's just really neat. And I mean, the story about the voicemail, like, it gave me chills. It kind of freaked me out. And I mean, I know people would say, like, well, maybe they accidentally called their house or whatever, but like, no, you know, if you accidentally do that or not. And it's just that's a really neat story. And then the one yet, like you said, with the sunflower, I mean, how sweet is that? And how, you know, almost it just brings you some peace to kind of, even if eventually
even if it's a coincidence,
see, okay, exactly. Even if it's a coincidence, it brings you peace. And I think there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, no, I love that so much. It reminds me of, you know, like how people say they see cardinals or redbirds and it reminds them of a family member and they see it as them like visiting them. You know, I don't care what you think. you know, if that's something that brings you peace of mind about, you know, what happened to your loved one and them being gone, I mean, that's just so touching and personal. And I don't know, I just love it. Like, it warms my heart kind of, you know, and I think it's just a great example of not everything paranormal has to be spooky either.
Exactly. And I think I tend to like that kind of spiritual paranormal thing better than the spooky stuff, but you know me.
Than the like evil, demonic, scary ghost.
Right. As I sit here and look, we're on like a Skype call and it's dark behind me. And I'm like, what if I see something behind me? But to be completely off topic, something that brings me peace is, how about those Gamecocks, Caitlin?
Wow. I really haven't dwelled on it a lot because I'm still so shocked that we won.
Totally off topic, but of course, if you've listened to our podcast, me and Caitlin both went to the University of South Carolina. And when we went there, we were very good at football. And I always say it's because we were there, because yes, as soon as we left, we were very bad. So mm-hmm. to see our Gamecocks kind of beating a few top tier teams, it definitely warms the soul and brings peace.
No, that was a great Thanksgiving blessing. I don't care about being sick or any of that through it. That really made it great.
Anytime you can see the Clemson Tigers lose, it's a good day for me.
Not to outcast our Clemson fan listeners here, but
true.
Go Gamecocks.
Sorry. And if you have a story that you'd like to share with us, or you can share with us your favorite football team, you can email us at theunrestpodcast@gmail.com.
Or guess what? We are on social media, just like everyone else in the world. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter. We're on TikTok, even Instagram. So follow us on all of those, because we like to do fun things, and we like for you to join in. And you can also join our Facebook group if you haven't already. But until next time.
I did a Reddit, but I don't know how to do it.
Maybe we're not super active on Reddit.
Or Twitter.
But until next time.
And until next time.
Unrest in peace.